Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Come with me while we take a trip into the Wayback Machine, to a lovely make-believe place where a soft-spoken man in a cardigan sweater introduced us to all the people in his neighborhood. Some of those people were puppets. Some were real people, including my next guest. One of the recurring characters on the show, Officer Clemens, was an African-American policeman, a rare sight on screen when the show debuted, and it was a quietly revolutionary act at the time. The show even got even more rad, including one particular episode that has become a classic, for a simple but profound act. Officer Clemens being invited by Mr. Rogers to join him in his dipping his feet in a kiddie pool. The close-up of their 2 feet was an extraordinary moment, given that in some places in America at the time, people would see hotels drain pools rather than have black and white people swim together. Let's take a listen.
That feels great. Here. You know, when you're a policeman, you do an awful lot of walking, and sometimes your feet get tired.
Right.
That feels better already.
Good.
Just massage him a little bit.
Cool water on a hot day.
Well, thank you for your refreshments.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. You're welcome, Officer Clemens.
Shall we turn this off?
Mm-hmm. Is that enough?
Oh, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Well, that was so enjoyable. I'm sorry I couldn't stay longer.
Well, I know how busy you are. But sometimes just a minute like this will really make a difference.
Actor and classically trained singer Francois Clemens played Officer Clemens on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood from until about 1993. And he joins me today to talk about his new memoir, titled Officer Clemens, about growing up and escaping the Jim Crow South, confronting racism in the classical music world, and living as a gay man while working in the early days of children's TV. Francois Clemens, it is an honor to have you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm indeed honored to be here. Thank you.
In your book, you tell us so much about how you grew up, and you write with such love and warmth about your grandfather, Granddaddy Saul, who was lost while your family was fleeing Mississippi, and it happened during a massive flood.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he mean so much to you?
Well, I didn't realize it at the time. You know, I was about 2.5, 3 years old, walking with this elderly gentleman who treated me like I was a treasure. He absolutely adored me. And he taught me, he was teaching me to have pride in myself, to love myself, that even though we had a history of slavery in America, he really made the point with me that we were kings and queens in Africa long before the white boat people came and conquistadors and stuff like that. And so he wanted me to take that as my inner self-image rather than I'm an ex-slave or something negative, I'm not educated. And not, but he started singing. There was a magic cane involved, which he used, and I didn't realize for years and later that my grandfather was the one who was singing when he told me that cane. Hmm. The cane is going to talk. The cane is going to sing. And I imitated what I heard him singing and what he was saying. I didn't know what I was saying, but it stayed with me. And when I lost him on that journey from Mississippi to Alabama, I grieved. My mother and grandmother was telling me, I grieved like a grown-up. It was not just a, oh, I miss him, and, you know, move on with your life. Every day I was looking for him, and it caused, you know, something, grief inside me. And I started singing because I had his cane, and they took it away from me. And they said, you've got to get over this. You know, you can't. This cane will just prolong the suffering. And when they took it away, I said, what's the matter? And I've been singing every time.
You really took to heart what your grandfather said, because when you were preparing to go to college, you wanted to go to Oberlin, and some of the counselors tried to dissuade you. Why didn't you listen to them, and then why did you choose Oberlin?
Well, by that time, I was listening to a woman named Mary Lou, who was a social worker, come to my house, and I sung for her. She had just graduated with a master's, like from Kent State or Young, I think it was Kent State. And she heard me sing and just said, you must develop this talent, this ability. So she paid for my voice lessons for 3 years. And, you know, years later I asked her, why did you do that? And that's another story entirely. But her generosity, she was one of the ones who influenced me to study voice with Ronald Gould, who's at Youngstown State University and St. John's Episcopal Church. So I moved from the ghetto into this Episcopal haven, and once again, I was very much appreciated. I was the tenor soloist, and I was still in high school. And the voice teacher, Ronald Gould, said, you must go to this school not far from here called Oberlin College. They have a conservatory. And Youngstown would not be able to give you the best for your musical education. And he was so insistent that I began to research and look it up and talk about it. And next thing I know, he and my high school music teacher, Mr. Miller, helped me fill out the applications and literally gave me the money to send them in. I didn't have the cash. And Mr. Miller took me there because if you lived within 200-300 miles of the school, you had to come in person. They don't realize sometimes what a hardship these things are. And my circumstances probably were just that special. But my music teacher took me there, and I sang for them at Oberlin, and they accepted me. I was accepted. But I didn't have any money. And I was telling the guidance counselor and people that, you know, I'm going to Oberlin. And they were deriding me a bit. She was very, very cynical. One day, Diva Clemens was born in her office. I rose up. This is the only way I can describe it. I said, you will not tell me where I can't go. I will not let you determine that. You don't have a right, and I can go wherever I want to. I mean, I just went on. And I flounced out of the room. There's no other way to describe it. I went out of there. I never went in there again. And then the principal, I said, I know I'm going to catch hell. It didn't happen the first day, second day, third. Finally, he said, Francois Clemens, come to the office. I thought, oh, Lord, they're going to throw me out of this place. And when I finally got into his office and I was sitting there, he looked at me and said, now, you know you owe Mrs. Chrysler an apology. That's not like you. And some of the things you said to her hurt her feelings. And she's a nice lady. She tries to do the best she can, but she doesn't always make it. And you have to abide by certain rules so we can get along around here. He was very gentle, but he's firm. And I said, what I really want to talk to you about is, I understand you, what is this Oberlin business? So he started putting me through my measure, asking me, and I was able to give him answers to all kinds of questions as to curriculum and special programs that they had, teachers that were there. And so he said, how are you going to pay for it? And we sat there very quietly. Finally, he said, I'm going to help you.
That is, you know, it's amazing when there are people who come into our lives and make these incredible, you know, just can change the course of your life. And I do want to turn a little bit to Mr. Rogers before we run out of time. I think it's so interesting that you were a little bit ambivalent about playing a police officer on the show at first. But when you think about what the legacy of Officer Clemens is, what do you think that is?
I'm very proud that I contributed. I was there from, you know, 1969, 1968 until 93. I'm proud of what I did because, first of all, it was difficult. And I put my burden on my shoulders, put my head down, and I started moving forward. I carried it because the police were like Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. They're foot on your neck. And they were shooting black boys in the back who had no weapons at all, no way to defend ourselves. I had gotten the speech from my mother and my three or four Aunt Cora, Aunt Hattie, Aunt Emma, Aunt Pearl, Aunt Bessie, all of them. How to stay alive in this world. Keep your eyes down. Don't make any noise. Don't draw any attention to yourself. And by all means, do not talk back to a white policeman. Well, I said, why can't I talk to them? I was so dumb and naive. I had no idea about the killing and the murder and stuff. So as I grew and looked around, I said, you know, they're telling the truth. So when Fred asked me to be a police officer, I said, Fred, you have no idea what I saw on the playground after dark in Youngstown. I don't want to be one of them. We talked very, very honestly about my experience and his. And he said, you're going to be a helper, Francois. That was the magic word. And he used it quite a bit during his ministry, his life. He said, there are kids who are going to grow up and become policemen because they have a good impression of what a policeman is and what he does. They will have seen you, and there will be kids who will want to be like you. And we need to start somewhere. He kept talking. Now, the truth is, Fred was the star of the show. He was the star writer. He wrote all of his scripts. He had these several people on the committee who got together, and they talked about themes and ideas mm-hmm. that he had. He had very strong views about what he was trying to do. He really was the producer, along with Heinz, Johnson & Johnson, and other companies like that. So he had all the aces and the joker, the wild card. He was, and there I was. And I knew it was a job. People had begun to talk about it in Pittsburgh, and that I was on it as a guest. And I began to see the value of the show and of being on it. It literally changed my life.
And you know what? I have to tell you, as a little kid growing up, watching it, a little girl of color, watching you, as you changed a lot of people's lives. It was such an important role. I want to let people know, you should definitely check out Francois Clemens' book, Officer Clemens. Also view the audiobook, because you read the audiobook. In the audiobook, you sing. It is just a very joyous experience hearing you tell your own story. Once again, it's Officer Clemens, a memoir. Francois Clemens, it was an honor, a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.